Committee, I think, have heard the bill. I think
we have only two members that are not on the Health Policy Committee.
Okay.
And we only have one of them here at the moment.
So, Madam Chair, this bill, and it start, this bill started there in the Health, in Senator Marty's Policy Committee. And I am now on, I think, fifth engrossment.
So it's been to quite a few other committees that people may have been on.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so I think everybody's heard the bill before.
They know what we're doing. It's pretty well pared down to being kind of the beginning of setting up a process for the Department of Health in collaboration with the PCA to set up a process for determining hazardous chemicals. It starts out with children's products, and that's where our focus is in this bill. And we're primarily
interested in fiscal note.
Yes, yes. So, Madam Chair.
So if you can just explain what happened with the fiscal part of it.
Madam Chair, you have the fiscal note. It's quite a few pages long, but as I look at the first page, I see that they have Health Department and PCA together on that fiscal note. And in fiscal 10, it looks like $198,011.89.
We don't actually have a copy of the fiscal note, I guess. I don't know why, but I think the gist of it is that the costs of this bill have been paid for by the Environment Committee out of a dedicated fund that they have. And so the costs that would be to the Department of Health do not have to be paid for by this division.
And Madam Chair,
that's the long and short of it.
Madam Chair, that's called the Environmental Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know much more about that. There are other things that SCORE grants are in there.
So this is just for us to know that the Department of Health would be taking on this new responsibility, and we don't have to pay for it out of a general fund appropriation. So does anybody have any questions about that?
Madam Chair, do people often come and say they don't need money? Probably not.
It's the only way we get a bill passed here.
So we do need a motion to adopt the unofficial engrossment SCS 0225CE1.
Yes.
So moved.
And Senator Lynch makes that motion. And that means that all the other committees that have seen this, I think there's only one division, but we would be adopting all of their work so that we have the bill as it has been last acted on in front of us.
Madam Chair, just now, about an hour ago, the Environment Division did do some amending to some language, but it...
Well, then that would be adopted as a committee report in the full Finance Committee.
I just wanted to tell you that it isn't precisely the same.
So, all in favor of that motion to adopt the unofficial engrossment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Any other questions on the bill? Seeing none, then Senator Lynch, would you like to move the bill for Senator Scheid?
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 225 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Madam Chair, I think we need a sign-in for our visitors at the testimony table.
I haven't actually had a chance to look at this fiscal note till right now.
Okay, Madam Chair, it's full of zeros, so that's the good news.
Well, do I have the latest? Because mine isn't full of zeros.
Okay, well, actually, I mean, the bottom line is it's not going to cost any money from the general fund. This is the newborn screening program. It has an increased specimen fee on it, and that actually pays for the bill that we're talking about.
So we just have a little problem in the tails here, where we don't net out. It looks like the cost to the state is 20 and 23.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lynch.
I'm not sure if there's a revised fiscal note that's being passed out or is circulating.
It should be in your packet.
If it's in my packet, then I would like clarification from Senator Erickson Ropes or perhaps from Mr. Godfrey. Were we able to address that FTE situation that we discussed? I'm wondering if that might help in part take care of some of our issue before us.
Madam Chair and Senator Lynch, actually, yes, we did get together and we talked about to the program directors, we talked to the department, the staff in the department that administers or oversees this program, and they explained to us we had some concerns about those positions as well. And if there's somebody from the department here, maybe you want to step up and talk to the specifics. But they did explain why they needed those extra FTEs to deal with this. And I think Senator Berglund at the last committee had also acknowledged that the department has gone through a lot of staff cuts. And if we're going to be expanding some of these programs, that they do have a capacity issue at staffing. And we have Maggie
Diebel
here, who might be able to more directly answer your questions. But I felt like they made their case with us for the needs for those staffing positions.
Members, the staffing isn't the issue in the fiscal note. I think the issue in the fiscal note is that we don't have the fee quite high enough in the second biennium. And while you talk to us, Mr. Godfrey's going to work on it a little bit and see if he can jiggle it a bit. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes, just for the record, I remain unconvinced. I don't need testimony on this. I just want to, for the record, say that I remain unconvinced that additional FTEs are necessary from the department when the impetus and behind this is the acquisition of an outside source to take care of this. No further discussions necessary. I just feel the need to put that on the record.
Well, and it does seem strange to me, I must say, that since we already are collecting a fee, that collecting a little higher fee would generate more staff need.
It's a public health matter. It's a public health matter.
Madam Chair and Senator Lynch, we had the same question, especially since you're contracting out to a nonprofit to deliver the program. But my understanding is, due to the cutbacks, this was actually a program that was funded on a temporary basis. The funding is going away, and we would have to they'd have to hire somebody specifically to deal with this program because they had handled this program just administratively.
So for 1 year, it's going to be 106.
The current staff members that were already there, and now those staff cuts have had those people go away. So Maggie might do a better job of explaining that.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Maggie Diebel. I'm the Director of Community and Family Health Division at the Department of Health. And if I could say that in looking out over the years of this program, this position would provide program management oversight of the grant, but also to address those needs that aren't covered by the grantee. So if we look at an additional 200 kids that are identified through the newborn screening program every year, we're tracking them through the age of 18. So there's an additional 200 kids that are sort of added to the total number of kids that we're tracking over the course of time until they're 18 years old. So in working with the grantee contractor, we would essentially be increasing the support that would be needed for those services to those additional kids that are being identified now through mandatory reporting. So we felt that this 0.5 FTE would be needed in order to ensure that those additional services, that the grantee contractor was not able to cover.
These additional kids are not as a result of this bill.
No, it's true. I think that.
Well, then, why is this bill? Why aren't you requesting this in your regular budget?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, if I can say too that, we felt that in the additional reporting requirements for the contractor as we go forward, as the number of children are served through this contractor, and ensure that we are responsive to you in reporting, et cetera, in evaluation, and making sure that approaches that are used are documented effectively, that this position would be required.
Well, let's ponder that for a minute. Let's have Mr. Godfrey talk about what we need to do to make this tails problem go away.
Madam Chair, members, as you can tell from the fiscal note on the front page, the summary shows a net cost in fiscal year 12 and 13 of $20,000 and $23,000 respectively from the general fund. To cover that cost, just need to increase the fee from $106 in fiscal year 12 to $106.50. And by doing so, that'll increase the revenue coming into the general fund by $36,000, which would then cover the costs for 12 and 13. And Ms. Kavanaugh has an amendment to that effect.
Senator Olson?
Well, Madam Chair, I just think maybe another option that we should consider is if this appears to the committee to be sort of a backdoor way of filling in a cut in the general budget that really doesn't make sense to us, and as it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that a half-time person would be needed for minimal contact with people over a long period of time. From what I recall on the conference committee that I sat on last year that had to do with budget reform, and we talked about whether we're really bound by the numbers in these fiscal notes, and my understanding is we're not. So, I guess the other option we would have other than raising the fee might be just to reject the numbers in the fiscal note.
Well, we could change the FTE.
Right.
And that would do something here. I don't know how much, but. So the FTE is $48,494. So you could reduce that amount by the difference and not raise the fee.
Madam Chair, we're recommending going to 0.25 FTE.
Across all of the years? Okay. So I don't think we need to change the language of the bill. We just need to change the appropriation amount.
Senator Berglund, while you're playing with that, I'd like to ask the department a question. I noticed, if I may,
that the FTE is a public health nurse advisor senior. Is there a reason why the responsibilities for which this FTE is it necessary to have that level of expertise?
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, yes, we currently have a senior public health nurse in that position who has expertise working with these children with hearing loss and with severe hearing loss, working with the audiologists and making those connections to the services in the community. So it is the level of skill required for not only for the grant oversight, but for the technical assistance in making sure that the follow-up to what the grantee does, which is an initial contact, and then, and again, Hands and Voices can speak to this as well, but they're doing parent-to-parent support for those families with children with hearing loss, and then the expertise of that senior-level public health nurse, making sure that those connections are made, again, with the audiologist and with the medical community.
And if you have you already have somebody in that position that couldn't?
We do.
And could continue to do that rather than add?
She can continue to do that, but we will say that, some of the current responsibilities would perhaps be shifted. But, again, we are being held to a higher standard, number one, for grant oversight. But as I was explaining earlier, since mandatory testing came into being, we are identifying now up to 200 kids per year, and we're tracking them over the course of 18 years. So this is going to be a cumulative number of kids that we're tracking. And theoretically, if the number of kids remains the same over the course of years, up to 200, and this is just at the newborn screening phase, we'd be talking about 4,000 kids a caseload. When they reach 18, then those kids would no longer be tracked, and we'd reach a stable number, if you will. One thing that we have not really gotten a handle on yet is identifying those kids who develop a hearing loss later. And there are an estimated double number of kids there. So there potentially are another 200 kids that we're not identifying because, again, they develop a hearing loss after that initial screening period. So in that case, we're talking about tracking 8,000 kids over the course of 18 years. So, it's I think we're all very gratified that this is now a mandatory testing program, but with that, I think, comes responsibility on the part of all of us to ensure that they're getting the services.
So do we have the amendment to do the 2.5 FTE?
It's needed to take
it did. That was my bill.
Mr. Godfrey?
Madam Chair, members, the FTE, the value of the FTE was one half FTE is 48,000, as Madam Chair mentioned. So we're taking down the Department of Health's appropriation. In the amendment, and if you have the amendment before you, it's on line, page one, line 16, reducing the number from 98,000 to 74,000. And the difference is the $24,000 that would recognize the now quarter FTE. And then on line 17, the amount will be changed from 75,000 to 51,000 for fiscal year 11 to reflect the reduction in the FTE. And then on line 1.21, there's also a change to reflect the fiscal note to change the Department of Human Services appropriation from 68,000 to 34,000.
Okay, so Senator Erickson Ropes makes that motion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
I'm wondering if we could have an explanation of this statement in the fiscal note that says the bill appropriates $300,000 annually beginning in state fiscal year 2011 for this activity. And of that amount, the commissioner may retain up to $98,000 in state fiscal year 2011 and up to $75,000 in subsequent fiscal years to cover program costs. And I'm wondering if they can save money or what exactly that means. Can they save that
money? Well, that was based on their assumption about the staffing they would need, and they have agreed to change that assumption. And so the numbers that would be in Senator Erickson Rope's amendment to the A2 amendment would reflect that and would reflect an error in the amendment on line 1.21 in terms of the appropriation to the Department of Human Services. Any other questions about the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Are there any other questions about the bill now? Senator Erickson Ropes, it's my intention to send this bill separately. We will be tracking it in our spreadsheet, but when we send it separately, we can't have people adding spending to it.
Yes, ma'am.
The reason I want to send it separately is because it is a fee. And I guess we're not supposed to try to have those in our bill if we don't have to. So you want to move your bill?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. Thank you to Ms. Kavanaugh and Mr. Godfrey.
Aren't they great?
They
just
they
really
are.
Okay. Then those in favor of the motion that Senate File 1512 as amended be recommended to pass, say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Okay. See, the next bill on the agenda is Senator Sharon's 1984.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I have a delete all amendment, the A1 amendment, that should be being distributed.
Yeah.
For Senate File 1984.
So just wait a second until everybody gets it. And Senator Sharon moves the A1 amendment. The only question that I have about the amendment, are these particular stimulus dollars available until expended, or is there a date by which they have to be expended? On some of them, there are dates by which they have to be expended.
That's definitely in the window. Senator, would you be willing to, Jennifer is going to be willing to, Jennifer Hull.
So,
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, I'm Jennifer Ho. I'm the Executive Director of Hearth Connection. It's my understanding, although the department could confirm this, that the date by which these funds need to be expended is past the date of the next biennium that we're asking them to be spended during. The period of time that they're available from the feds is longer than the two-year window of the next biennium.
Well, the language says remain available until expended. It doesn't have a date.
The language, Madam Chair, the language could be amended to say that it needed to be spent on the last day of the biennium.
Little light reading for you.
Okay, any other questions?
Should we make that as an additional amendment? The amendment?
Okay, Ms. White, do you want to tell us what we need to do here?
Madam Chair and members, I think we just need to delete then and remain available until expended. And it needs to be spent within the biennium.
So Senator Sharon incorporates that into her amendment. Any further discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion, the amendment is adopted.
Well, thank you. This amendment specifies that $3 million in the DHS Homeless Prevention and Rapid Rehousing Program funds that are provided under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 be directed to a long-term homeless service fund. Ideally, we would have general funds to restore the base that we've been attempting to sustain for this program. But since this money is available, we thought that this was a great resource for us to provide at least for a while some funding for the homelessness program. I've asked Jennifer Ho, the executive director of Hearth Connection, to make a brief presentation of the regional long-term homelessness service projects and research findings on the efficacy of supportive housing.
I don't think that will be necessary. We have.
Then if there are any questions.
We have funded this in the past. I think we're all familiar with the program. And very good use of some of our stimulus money. Any other questions?
That's more important.
Then we'll set this aside to be incorporated into the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much, Senator. I would just draw everybody's attention that you should have received a copy of this report that will talk about the successes that are occurring as a result of this program.
Okay.
Move on to item number 5, Senate File 1664, Senator Berglund, Medical Review Team Process Modification and Appropriation. Members, there's a fiscal note that is being distributed. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members, we did have a little hearing on this earlier in the year. If you remember, there were questions about whether we could shorten up the time it takes for people to go through the SMRT process. And if we did so, if there would be additional savings to the state. And this bill is an attempt to shorten up the time by having the department take over some very minimal additional services that are otherwise done by the counties but not always done very timely because they're overworked and underpaid. And
Madam Chair, could you say that again? Senator Berglund.
Senator Berglund, would you remind me what SMRF stands for?
Senator Berglund.
It's the Medical Review Team Process for determining whether an individual will be found eligible for disability, for Social Security disability. And what that at that time, then they also can have medical assistance paying for their health care, whereas they might have been on general assistance medical care prior to that. So I have Ann Quincy here from Legal Aid who can help answer questions about this. It does look like we believe that while there will need to be some upfront investment in this, that it would have some long-term savings. And so I guess it's just a matter of whether we think that upfront investment is worth the savings.
Are there any questions from members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Berglund. Are the savings, assuming that there are going to be a reduction in the number of people eligible, or where would the savings come from?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, the savings would come by getting people through the process of determining if they're eligible sooner. And therefore, they would be on Medicaid sooner, and they would be off of a state-only funding source for their health care sooner.
Senator Olson.
And the expenditures come from having staff at DHS that would take over some functions that otherwise are being done by the counties. And, you know, what I envision in the future is that, you know, all these medical records are the issue that people have to gather. You're aware of that. Mm-hmm. But once we get electronic medical records, it seems like the state could do this much more efficiently than the counties. But for now, this is where we're at in terms of it doesn't take over the entire process, but it does take over part of the process.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund. Well, I think, you know, anything that we can do to try to speed up the disability determination. I know there's a really big backlog at the federal level in terms of getting administrative hearings, and I don't know if this will work hand in hand with that or if, you know, but certainly it's always a shame when people are stuck out there in limbo and don't have access to getting a final determination made. So I would think this would be a really good policy to implement.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, just to be clear, it won't speed anything up at the federal level.
No.
But what it does do is it gets them on to a better funded, better stable health care program because Medicaid is an entitlement. And what they've been on isn't. So, and it is all state money. So
Senator Berglund, in addition to with the initial investment that it we're slated to make in 2010 and the savings that then occur in the latter years, that's helping our general fund, that's helping our healthcare access fund, and it's also providing some relief to counties. Any questions from members? Senator Berglund.
So I would move that Senate File 1664 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right.
And my thanks to Legal Aid and the department for working on this so that we could help make something improved here.
Okay, great. Senator Berglund, do you, it is your desire to move on to number six with the amendment RER015.
Yes.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members, this is something that was brought to me and would change the time period at which someone in our MFIP program who has a child would be required to go to work. So it would change it from 12 weeks to 12 months of age. And we believe that this will have savings because the child care costs for an infant are so high that they outstrip by far the grant an individual would receive. And so we believe that this would have savings for our child care program. And it's about as simple as that.
Questions from members? Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, Senator Bergelin, I'm assuming that we just haven't been able to get a fiscal note on it yet.
No, we don't have a fiscal note, but members, the way I'm proceeding is that we're just going to hear bills, and then when we get the fiscal notes, we'll put them in your packet. But in order for the staff to draft what might be in the bill, we need to move ahead, and so that's what we're doing.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Bergelin, I think I understand what you said about the cost of child care services for an infant, but does this delay or extend the period of time that somebody would be eligible for services? I mean, does...
No, it doesn't.
Senator Bergelin.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, it doesn't delay the five-year limit, but it gives... And a person could opt to work prior to the 12 months, but it doesn't mandate that they have to. And so we think some people would prefer to stay home with their children a little bit longer because there is some evidence that there's benefit to the child if they are nurtured for a longer time by their mother. And if people are choosing to do that because they're not required to be in work search at 12 weeks, then we would have a savings because we have to pay for the child care costs when they're in work search, and those child care costs are much higher.
Any further questions?
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Senator Bergelin, I was just wondering, are these amendments just for discussions of the agenda tonight, and then they'll be added at the end of the bill, is that the idea?
Senator Bergelin.
The idea is that they would be added into the omnibus bill, and when we get the fiscal note, we would put it in your packet and draw your attention to it. But we're not going to just wait to have the hearings until we get the fiscal notes.
But we're going to vote on them tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bergelin, we're just wondering amongst ourselves here about the larger program. And I agree, it's a good thing to have moms staying home with our kids as often as they can, and the whole fiscal thing about paying for child care. But is this a disincentive for a mother then to get a job? And once that mother would have gotten a job, would she not be eligible for child care, or would she still be eligible for child care? And we're just dealing with the child care expense. We're just wondering if how this connects with
Senator Bergelin.
Madam Chair, she would be required to be in work search once the child reaches 12 months of age. She would be able to look for work sooner than that if she chose to. In either event, we would be paying for the child care, but if she opts to stay home with her child longer than 12 weeks, we would save on the child care costs.
Senator Erickson-Ropes. Right.
Madam Chair, Senator Bergelin, yes, I understand that. I'm wondering about if the mother, while she was searching for work, got a job, would she move then off of this program that would pay for her child care?
Oh, no.
Senator Bergelin.
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson-Ropes, MFIP pays for child care until you go off, and then once you go off, you have one transitional year. You get child care, and then after that, you're placed at the top of the basic sliding fee waiting list. Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Senator Fischbach. I'm trying to be, I just want to kind of understand what we're doing, because I guess I don't see that we have the omnibus bill in front of us, or do we somewhere?
Senator Bergelin.
This would be an amendment to the omnibus bill, but we don't have pages or lines because we don't know exactly where it will fit into the omnibus bill at this point in time.
But do we have a...
Senator Fischbach.
Sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Bergelin, do we have a Senate file number for the omnibus bill, I guess? I'm wondering if we can even... Can we vote on an amendment that we don't have a bill to amend to?
Senator Fischbach, we have been, as a matter of process, been laying things over...
Madam Chair, I appreciate that, but Senator Bergelin indicated we were actually going to vote on these.
We're going to be laying it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Okay. And the final vote will be taken when we have the final language in front of us.
Okay. And
Senator Fischbach.
If there's a huge objection, I would, I and the staff would please like to hear it now, because we're moving ahead with drafting.
Well, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
And Senator Berglund, I understand your frustration. I understand it. I do feel a little uncomfortable, though, voting on something like this without the fiscal note, because you said you expect the savings, and I'm just wondering. And I understand. I'm not in no way, shape. I'm commiserating with you about the fiscal note issues. And that's why I just am a little concerned that, because we are the Finance Committee. So.
Madam Chair.
Well, I just want to express my concern on that.
And Senator Fischbach and Senator Brigham, we haven't been, I'm not anticipating that we're being asked to vote on any of these amendments tonight. Rather, we are hearing about the amendments and we are laying them aside. And the opportunity to vote will come at a later time.
Right.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Fischbach, I hope you don't feel too uncomfortable because there's going to be quite a few more of these.
Well, and
Senator Fischbach.
And Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I think you did indicate that we were going to vote. I heard that earlier. So I just want, that's why I was a little, laying aside, that's not a concern, I guess. But you did indicate we were going to vote. So I just wanted to know. I do understand the process, so I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, we'll be,
Senator Berglund.
This would not be going out separately. This would be laid over for consideration in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Senator Prentner-Soling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to speak in favor of the amendment. It has potential of saving up to 40 weeks of child care costs, and it provides a better environment for a child and the mother for bonding and for preparation. So I think it's an excellent amendment.
Okay. To be clear, we'll just set this aside. And if we could move then on to item number 7, members, it's amendment KC0004, which is being distributed. Podiatry-directed wound care. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this is a pilot project idea that was brought to me by folks who do podiatry care. And the idea is here that they would be working with primary care physicians who would have patients in a medical home environment. And they would be providing wound care and other preventative services to diabetics who otherwise can end up having their foot care and their wound care being quite lengthy and expensive. And they believe that by having the physician actually working directly with a podiatrist in these cases, that they can reduce the number of wound care treatments that would be needed. And in the case where there is wound care, they would be shortening the length of time that it takes for the wound to heal by one half. And they would be approaching this on kind of a, I guess you'd call it a sub-basket of care for diabetics. They would be, so if the patient needed hospitalization because of foot care problems or wound care problems, then they would be doing this all as a sub-basket of care and assume the risk for that.
Senator Berglund, I had a bill on a,
yes,
I think
I remember.
A related topic, and so I'm only sorry that I didn't that I don't have an amendment like this. And on that concept, with the
this isn't dealing with one particular type of wound care. Mm-hmm. There are a number of types that are available, and we're not specifying any particular type that would be used. And this, again, is just a pilot project in our medical assistance program to work with diabetics only in conjunction with their primary care physician who would be treating them as a medical home. And we have specified the number of recipients that would be in this 2-year pilot project, and we hope that by doing that we can be able to get a general idea of the savings.
Senator Berglund, I think this is a good concept and gives me some additional things to think about and consider. Questions from members. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, is this site-specific or is it statewide? How?
It's Senator statewide. Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Prettner-Solon, it's statewide, but we still needed to have, I mean, I think it'd be pretty hard for anybody to fiscal note a pilot project if they don't know how many diabetic patients would be in it. So it's not in one location. It would be with a number of providers who'd be working with podiatrists, but we would have a number of 1,000 people with diabetes that have these kind of foot care problems in this pilot project.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund. I wonder if we could just to make sure that we could clarify that on line 1.24, if we could say statewide after the word recipients, just to make sure that we're clear in the direction that, you know, that there should be an effort made to kind of spread this around from a geographic standpoint.
I don't think
Senator Berglund.
I don't think that's a problem.
Senator Olson, are you making a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
I can just
Chair.
Incorporate that into the amendment. We haven't actually done anything with the amendment, so.
So, members.
I guess we can vote for amendments to the amendment, but not on the amendment. I don't know. I think it's better if I just incorporate it into the amendment.
Senator Fischbach, I'm looking down to see if that's
actually
comfortable with that.
Well.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, you guys do whatever you want because I'm not, I won't call you on it because I don't think it's probably, we don't technically have the amendment in front of us because we don't technically have a bill. Am I correct, counsel?
Senate counsel.
We have a bill that we're using as a base bill. Yeah.
Chair, I mean, I understand the situation we're in, Senator Berglund, so, but I mean, unless the bill is here in front of us, we can't add amendments to a bill that is not in front of us under discussion.
And members, we are not adding any amendments to any bill. We are simply discussing amendments and laying them aside. And I, Senator Fischbach, have as much frustration as you have, as much frustration as I know the chair has had, and probably all of us as members working collectively on putting together a package to move forward from this division. But the fact of the matter is that time is of the essence, and we simply do not have all of the materials that we need in this division to be able to move forward in sort of the conventional process. And so we are trying to move forward as diligently as we can, as efficiently as we can, and we need a little bit of flexibility. Senator Olson.
Well, and Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, in the Judiciary Committee, we have many times amended amendments and then that are laid on the table for possible inclusion with Senator Betzold on our committee, and it seems to have been okay.
Okay.
Senator Berglund.
No, Madam Chair, one other clarification about this pilot project that would make it maybe a little bit different than otherwise is that the idea is that the podiatrist would actually see the patient in the primary care physician's clinic. And so rather than referring somebody to go see somebody else because they're developing a problem and maybe that person doesn't get an appointment right away or never makes the appointment, this would all be happening as a real true medical home concept where the podiatrist would be working right in the primary care clinic.
Our
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, is that happening now? I'm not aware of podiatrists working in
primary care
facilities. And
it's not. That's why this would be a more unique pilot project because we know with this kind of a partnership that the folks will be getting this early intervention and early care to prevent problems as well as treating wound care more in a more efficacious way.
Senator,
so we actually believe that this pilot project will prevent amputations.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I think it's not always podiatrists that are doing wound care, though. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's plastic surgeons that are doing wound care.
Well, in this
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, in this case, we're talking about diabetic wound care, and we wouldn't want to wait till somebody needed a surgeon to be dealing with that problem.
No, Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, there are actually wound care clinics, though, and it's usually plastic surgeons that are staffing those wound care clinics. That's what I was thinking.
Well,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Prettner-Sullivan, the idea of this pilot is to get it closer to the patient at the site that they're receiving their diabetic care.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund. Sort of to Senator Prettner-Sullivan's point about the podiatrists, there are nurses that are capable of identifying skin breakdown. And if we're talking about a program that focuses on prevention and then care of diabetic wounds, hopefully they're going to be diagnosed early or identified early and do those things on the front end as opposed to the back end, which is more of the surgical interventions that you're talking about, Senator Prettner-Sullivan. So I'm wondering if we're limiting ourselves somehow to the podiatrist needing to be involved with this as opposed to other healthcare professionals that might also be able to focus on prevention and care?
Well,
Senator Berglund.
Senator, Madam Chair and Senator Erickson-Ropes, nobody else came to me and said they wanted to do this. Maybe this will generate more interest, and there will be others. I'm not opposed to others. But I'd hate to include them at this point and then not know if they actually are going to want to do it.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's fine, Senator Berglund. Thank you. The only other piece about this in terms of a study is unless you have a control group, it's hard to document savings or that you're being effective, especially when it comes to prevention. Because if you're preventing something from happening, the terrible wound never really gets to a point where it becomes a terrible wound, and then it's hard to say that we prevented something. And I believe in prevention. Believe me, I think we need to be putting a lot of resources into the prevention side of things. But this says you're going to demonstrate cost savings data, and I don't know how you're going to demonstrate the savings in a prevention program unless you have a control group that's going on at the same time that doesn't get any intervention.
Well,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson-Ropes, we would have a group of people who would be receiving the care that they otherwise would be getting without the pilot that we would be comparing to this 1,000 that we would have in the pilot.
Thank you.
Seeing no addition, Senator Sharon.
This is not on the fiscal note, so I'm a little bit with this chair.
Senator Sharon, be brief.
This. Yes, I will.
Senator Sharon.
You can also take 1,000 persons in the same clinic in 2 years earlier that had not received this and compare it. So you could do a research project within the context of a clinic without having to have two different systems.
Thank you, Senator.
Sorry, Chair.
Any additional questions or comments from the committee? All right. We will set that aside. We'll move on to the next amendment, which is number 8 on your agenda. And members, note that there is an amendment being passed out that is a replacement. So the amendment before you is actually DG0007A, not the 6A that appears in your packet. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this is a bill that deals with foster care rate limits. It is a similar idea that the governor has in his budget for another area of long-term care. And adult foster care and supportive living services are one of our highest reimbursed services, one of our most expensive services that we can provide. And so this is simply language that would take those that are above the 95th percentile of the statewide rate, and it would bring them down by 5%. And, of course, we're also considering the acuity of the individuals in our methodology. And we have this little worksheet. It's not a fiscal note, but Department of Human Services has been working very hard on helping us with this, and so this is would be the basis for their developing the fiscal note.
So, members, there's a worksheet. I think that's a technical term, a worksheet being distributed for your information. And so on the bottom of this worksheet, it reflects the savings to the state budget. Any questions from members?
Jeez, that'd be great.
Senator Berglund.
So I would just ask that we set this aside for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay. Moving right along, Senate File 1403, Cesarean Deliveries, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, we actually do have a bill here for this one, Senate File 1403. It started out being a bill that would do prior authorization for cesarean sections as a way to try to control the growing rate of cesarean births in our Medicaid program. And we were told that they already are prior authorized. The only trouble is that none of them are denied. So then we decided we would try another approach. And this is an approach that is being used in some states now and is being considered by several other states this year of coming up with a blended rate for things that are beyond a normal vaginal birth. There are several codes, and then, you know, regular cesareans and complicated cesareans. And so by doing a blended rate, the idea is that you will discourage as many cesareans being done. If there is a choice, they could just as well do a lower procedure because they're not going to get paid anymore for the cesarean. And and so I have this A2 amendment that changes the bill into the blended rate. We also thought that we should cancel our prior authorization contract since it doesn't seem to be accomplishing very much. And we wouldn't really need it, I don't think, after we do this blended rate. It's not right. So I would move the A2 amendment.
Are there questions on the A2 amendment? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just wondering if anyone has had an opportunity to analyze what the financial impact would be on various different hospitals. I mean, I know that one of the things that I've talked to hospital administrator in my area about is, you know, deliveries are probably the most common medical procedure that the hospital is performing, and smaller rural hospitals are much more likely to be dependent on the payments for those kinds of procedures than are, say, larger hospitals where there are more sophisticated services being delivered. So I just wonder if this is going to have a disproportionate impact on those hospitals that don't offer the real complex kinds of delivery, and I mean of medical services. So, you know, kind of
Madam
a long...
Chair.
Sorry,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, we haven't done an analysis of who's affected by this, but what we're doing in this is we're lowering the rate we pay for a cesarean, and we're increasing the rate that we would pay for a vaginal delivery with complications. So in order to figure out what total impact it would have, if you assume nobody's going to change their behavior, But, of course, we're doing this to change behavior. But if you assume nobody changes behavior, you'd have to have a breakdown of how many of the different codes they bill for. If your hospital, for example, tends to bill more for vaginal deliveries with complications as opposed to cesarean sections, then they'd be better off with this bill than they would be under the present reimbursement rate.
Senator Olson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Berglund. I'm assuming that by the time we vote on this, if there's our issues with it, we'll probably hear. maybe we'll hear that people appreciate this and that it's a good thing. So something, but I just wondered if there had been any thought given to that.
Senator Berglund.
And Madam Chair, we also do have kind of a worksheet for this. While we don't actually have a fiscal note, we do appreciate the worksheet, and so you can see kind of what savings would be to the state, what the assumptions are about the savings to the state.
Senator Berglund, you commented earlier that we have this pre-authorization, and it appears that it has been ineffective.
I might add, Madam Chair, that it's not ineffective in every state. But in our state, our contractor is worried about liability. So they are approving them all, in which case, in my opinion, we're kind of wasting our money. So we might as well save that money and do this instead and see if this works better.
Senator Berglund renews her motion to adopt the A2 amendment. Any further discussion? Senator Pretner Solon.
This seems like, Madam Chair, it makes me uncomfortable just because I don't know enough about this. And I'm not, it seems to be based on finances rather than best practices at this time. And so I'm uncomfortable about that. And I realize we need to save money, but I also realize that, again, we're cutting the hospitals, which is another cut in their level of reimbursement. It also makes me, I'm glad I'm finished having babies, because I would like to be able to have options available to me that I felt were the best things for me at the time. And I feel that this in many ways is limiting the options that are available to a mother.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Pretner Solon, just so I can be very clear, this isn't just changing the rate for the hospital, it's changing the rate for the physician services also, because we believe more often it is a physician decision encouraging a patient to choose something over something else.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pretner Solon.
Senator Berglund, there are a lot of reasons, which I don't necessarily agree with, but there are a lot of reasons why in rural hospitals there are more C-sections than there are vaginal births. And that's because they can't always have on call 24 hours a day all the staff that are necessary in order to, in case there are complications that arise. And so it's better to plan it during a daytime hours when those staff are there, because it's more cost-effective for the hospital. Now, that isn't always the best way to do things, but sometimes it's the only way they can afford to do things. It isn't always then at that time always the best consideration for the patient either. But at the same time, if I need a C-section, I want to be able to have a C-section, or but I would prefer to have a vaginal delivery myself. Not every parent would. Not every child, every mother would. My sister wouldn't have.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Pretner Solon, we in no way envision eliminating cesareans. But we do believe that we could do about 5% less of them. And that's what we're aiming at with this. And so if we're paying more for procedures that are less than a cesarean, then maybe those hospitals could afford to do fewer cesareans.
But
Madam Chair. Senator Berglund.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
This isn't paying more than the current vaginal deliveries.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Prentner-Solon, no. It's the procedures that are above a normal vaginal delivery, and so we're paying more for the ones that are not vaginal, that are not C-sections, and we're paying less for the C-sections. So we're paying more for vaginal deliveries with complications or vaginal deliveries with sterilization or DNCs.
And I'll just note that I've stopped counting the number of amendments, bills, provisions, and ideas that have come forward that I've either not wholeheartedly wanted to vote on or support. Unfortunately, we're plagued with a lot of decisions like that this session because of the challenges that we face. Senator Berglund renews her motion to adopt the A2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. And with
then we'll set this aside for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Members, there's no additional work on the agenda. I will just point out to you in your packet of materials is also an updated fiscal note on Senator Prentner-Solon's bill, Senate File 1911, the net effect showing zero fiscal impact. So that's just there, provided for your information this evening.
And
Senator Berglund.
And Senator Prentner-Solon, I thought for some reason we needed to hear that bill. Is that bill in our division?
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Madam Chair, if I can remember clearly, it's been a while now, I'm not sure. It seems it is in your division.
So my intent would be just to send that bill out separately.
Yes.
It has no fiscal impact, and that's all we needed to know.
Yes. It has been heard in your division already.
All right. So you can tell Senator Cohen then that you're good to go.
Okay. Senator Prentner-Solon, you're good to go.
Okay.
All right. There being no further business before the committee,